Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Midtown Business Radio.
Hey, everyone. It is CW. Thank you for checking out the Midtown Business Radio Show. Now, I know my business listeners out there are very familiar with the Affordable Care Act and the fact that it contains some business-facing mandates around the provision of healthcare benefits for their employees. And you know that it is based upon how many hours those employees work as to whether or not they qualify to receive healthcare benefits. We know that over 30 hours or more, those employees may be entitled to having healthcare benefits of some type provided to them at some expense to the employer. I've got subject matter expert Ann Murray, attorney with Nelson Mullins Riley and Scarborough, and shared some excellent information that will be particularly useful to those small and mid-sized business owners who have yet to really begin to assess what the ACA is going to require of them for their particular workforce as it's comprised of a combination of full-time equivalents and part-time workers. She also got into some of the new reporting requirements laid out by the Affordable Care Act that could have a significant impact on what they're having to compile as far as the various data elements around the activities of that workforce. Here's Ann talking about why the time is now for the business owners out there in the community to really make sure by sitting down with a subject matter expert on the Affordable Care Act and its requirements for their business that they have their bases covered. Check it out.
I think this is an area that, you know, for most large employers, especially here locally, you know, they've been addressing this for years. But it's these smaller employers, frankly, a lot of the folks that may be attending the Vendor Expo coming up, these are the people that many times they put their head in the sand or hoped it would go away over a number of years, you know, as we saw lots of challenges to the law. But beginning in 2015 and for some employers who were able to delay the impact, 2016, even they've really got to face the fact that medical coverage and a decision of whether or not they're going to offer it and pay for a portion of it is a business decision they have to make. And they have to weigh the costs. The same, you know, it's going to be a different answer for every company. But what they have to do is make a logical and reasoned decision what's best for their company.
I was also happy to be joined in the studio by Adam Smith. He's the chief procurement officer for the city of Atlanta. His department of procurement covers the needs of all goods and services for all 15 departments of the city of Atlanta government. That includes the Atlanta Airport, in addition to watershed management and all of those big agencies who manage and keep our city running. We were focused on the economic opportunity that the Department of Procurement provides to local merchants, large and small, through its invitations to bid on the projects where it needs to acquire goods and services of a host of types, whether it's pens, pencils, paper clips that those departments will need to just run their daily operations, to engineering services, to construction services, to food and beverage services for the airport, for example, a host of opportunities, regardless of the vertical that the business might come from, there's very likely to be an opportunity to do long-term business with the city government to keep it running and then, of course, obviously help their business to grow. Here is Adam talking a little bit about the opportunity to do business with the city government, and we also talked about the upcoming Business Expo going to be held March 31st at the Georgia World Congress Center, free of charge to those who attend, with an opportunity to learn about the various projects that the city is seeking resources for now, as well as how to go about preparing your business to submit bids with the city to win some of those opportunities. Check it out.
We're responsible for soliciting for the goods and services, bringing on the businesses who can provide those goods and services for the city department. And that's done through a competitive process, through what we call our solicitation process. As government procurement, we're responsible to promote competition, making sure that we give all businesses an opportunity to compete for the business. One of the things that we enjoy doing is making sure that local businesses are also a part of our process. And so we try to include them in everything that we, particularly our local businesses. One of the things that we're doing soon this month, March 31st, Thursday, March 31st, we're having our Vendor Expo. We'll call it our Business Expo. And it's really one of our premier events. And it's an opportunity for the vendor community, our business community, to interact with city officials from various departments. It's really what we call our business learning day, where the business community can learn how to do business with the city of Atlanta. There you will learn how to put a proposal together, just basic information. We can't help you put a proposal together, but just provide you with basic information on what's required for our proposals. What are some of the required forms we require you to complete? What are some of the pitfalls that we've seen some of the other proponents do in past solicitations? But the most important thing, it gives the vendor community an opportunity to learn and understand what the prospective procurements are going to be so that you can prepare your businesses for those opportunities. And I will tell you that at the city, we're extremely busy. I mean, if you can just look at the airport, if you've been at the airport, you know how busy we are. And it's continuing to grow. Lots of construction, lots of professional services. So there are many opportunities for the business community to get involved in doing business with the city of Atlanta.
Stick around. I got the full interview with Adam Smith and Ann Murray coming up next. Good morning, everyone. It is C.W. Hall, your host here on the Midtown Business Radio Show. Thank you for making us a part of your day today. I have a couple of folks I'm pleased to introduce you to with me in the studio. One of them is a neighbor, actually. She had a very short trip. Corporate law expert Ann Murray, attorney with Nelson Mullins Riley in Scarborough, just upstairs from our studio here in the WorldPay building in Atlantic Station.
Yes.
We're going to be talking a little bit about considerations around the Affordable Care Act and the implications for business.
Yes, we will.
Nice to be here. Now that it's rolling out more in force, there's some things that these business leaders and entrepreneurs need to be thinking about as it relates to their business. And then I've got Chief Procurement Officer for the City of Atlanta, Adam Smith, joining me in the studio as well, talking about some ways that small and mid-sized businesses in the Atlanta area can do business with the city. There's a host of opportunities, it sounds like. And then they've got a big event coming up March 31st, a vendor expo for those vendors to come and get familiar with the various departments of the city and opportunities for them. So thanks for taking some time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Talking about the Affordable Care Act, and now that the law is actually starting to really begin to progress through some of the mandates that were laid out by the law around how the business community manages healthcare benefits that are offered or not to their employees, what are some of the things that these businesses need to start thinking about as it relates to being compliant with the Affordable Care Act around their healthcare benefits? Particularly for some of those not so large businesses that maybe have tens of employees or barely over 100, as opposed to some of the larger ones.
I think this is an area that, you know, for most large employers, especially here locally, you know, they've been addressing this for years. But it's these smaller employers, frankly, a lot of the folks that may be attending the vendor expo coming up. These are the people that many times they put their head in the sand or hoped it would go away over a number of years, you know, as we saw lots of challenges to the law. But beginning in 2015, and for some employers who were able to delay the impact, 2016, even they've really got to face the fact that medical coverage and a decision of whether or not they're going to offer it and pay for a portion of it is a business decision they have to make. And they have to weigh the costs. The same, you know, it's going to be a different answer for every company. But what they have to do is make a logical and reasoned decision what's best for their company.
And over the last year or two, we were watching things kind of get pushed back in terms of when they were going to actually be required. But now that's not on the table anymore.
Right. For anyone with what they do under the Affordable Care Act is measure it by your full-time equivalents, which is a combination of your full-time employees and your part-time staff. You know, you could have five full-time employees and maybe 100 part-time workers or 200 part-time workers and actually amount to an employer who's large enough to be subject to this law. So everyone needs to focus on just trying to figure out, first and foremost, you know, get with advisors, whether it's, you know, a trusted attorney or it's your benefits broker or accountant. But you need to make sure you know whether or not you need to be in compliance.
How often do you sit down with a business owner and find out that they didn't realize the scope and extent of these things that they need to be considering?
I would estimate that we're getting 3 to 5 calls a week just from employers who are realizing that, you know what, I never did take that step back and figure out who do I need to be counting and am I really subject to this law? Let me give you an example. A typical restaurant, you know, many restaurants here locally may have 2 or 3 or 4 locations. Each one's set up as a separate company, as most businesses do. But what they don't realize is that as part of setting up those companies, they may have enough common ownership that they're all looked at from the IRS's perspective as one employer. And if you're looked at as one employer, I don't care if, you know, restaurant A has 10 employees and restaurant B has 20 and restaurant C has 30, that may all amount to, you know, everyone being subject to this law. And it's so commonly overlooked. You know, we're sitting down with employers and talking with them on the phone just through this initial analysis, because it's an area that, quite frankly, has been part of the tax laws for decades, but it didn't have the same impact it does today. The Affordable Care Act just brought out this need to figure out who's related, who's part of my group, and who might taint me.
Right, because that, as you talked about, the number of employees is part of what we're dealing with. And then it also has some focus on how much they work, whether they're full-time or not. And normally we were thinking about full-time was 40 hours, but that's not necessarily the case anymore as it relates to calculating these types of requirements.
Correct. That's one of the areas that we had hoped would change under the Affordable Care Act, because the threshold for someone being considered full-time and you needing to offer medical coverage to them is 30 hours per week on average. Or actually, the IRS kind of translates that into 130 hours per month. That's how they want to measure it. But for a lot of companies, you know, that has changed. And typical employee handbooks will say, listen, full-time is 35 or 40 hours, and that's mm-hmm. when you get benefits.
Right.
People aren't taking that step back and saying, wait, you know, is everything now lining up? It's also changed the way that companies are operating. For some companies, you know, like it or not, for business and cost reasons, they're having to drive down the hours of their workers. You know, for others, they're choosing to, you know, hire a lower demand, you know, more part-time workers to kind of try and stay below those costs. So it's really had an impact on how businesses operate.
Well, that was one of the unintended consequences that many folks felt like were fairly obvious about it, that when you have that type of requirement in place, typically it puts in place a pressure for folks to work around that, you know, be compliant, but all right, this is the number I have to go under. So they start altering their practice. And so what you're saying, Anne, is that in your practice and dealing with the business community out there, you're actually starting to see some of that happen where the businesses are truly beginning to hire differently and then also schedule differently.
I see it all the time. And there are anti-abuse rules within the Affordable Care Act where, you know, you're not supposed to deny someone, you're not supposed to take someone who, let's say, is a full-time employee and drive down their hours deliberately
right.
for purposes of, you know, taking away their benefits. In fact, there's some ERISA sections, some sections of the law that can impact that. But what we're seeing, you know, like it or not, what we're seeing across the board is that especially in the hospitality, you know, restaurant, a lot of the lower pay industries where this is a huge additional cost, you know, relative to their profit margin to try and provide medical coverage, that what they're doing is they're starting to drive down those hours. So unfortunately, the people that this law was intended to protect, those that were, you know, not the kind of the working poor, that were unable to afford health coverage themselves, now they're finding themselves still not getting health coverage and having to get two jobs because now they can't find a job that's going to give them 30 hours or more per week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I don't have the solution, but it's just we're seeing it more and more, and it's an unfortunate situation.
I had heard that one of the plans to combat that was going to be utilizing total hours worked of my workforce. So if on a given day, previously, maybe it was, you know, a few years ago, maybe my office was comprised of 10 full-time employees who worked 40 hours a week. Now it's the same 400 hours a week being worked, but it's done by 15 or 18 employees putting in those 400 hours. Do you follow me? So that the same amount of hours are being worked, but it's just distributed across more people so that they're not, there's fewer of them working that 40-hour threshold. And I had heard that there was going to be a measure to try to use that approach so that you're employing 400 hours now and you were employing 400 hours before. So the result is you've got this number of FTEs. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, and you're correct. Actually, that is included That concept is included in the law now. For purposes of figuring out if you're even subject to the Affordable Care Act, we count these full-time equivalents, FTEs. And the way we do that is we count every full-time employee as one, and we take all the part-time employees and we total up their hours each month, you know, divide by a set number of hours and average it over a year, and we come up with sort of this fictional full-time equivalent. So the idea there is you can't move your workforce to full-time, assuming you're still getting the same, you know, combined total hours out of them. You can't move to a part-time workforce and just avoid the Affordable Care Act altogether, or the employer mandate that we're talking about here. But we still don't have anything out there that solves the problem that once you are subject to the Affordable Care Act and the employer mandate, you only have to offer medical coverage to your full-time employees. And that's what's the issue here, because if full-time is 30 hours or more per week, if employers have fewer full-time employees, you know, they don't have to shell out the money for the premium cost. And we don't have a solution yet on that. I don't know how they would do that by totaling up the hours, you know, unless they had an across-the-board requirement that every single employee was offered coverage. But I couldn't see that. Never say never, as we all know.
We've been talking with corporate law expert attorney Ann Murray with Nelson Mullins here in Atlanta and learning a little bit about how the Affordable Care Act is changing the requirements on the small and mid-sized business, particularly those who employ a lot of part-time and some full-time workers, and how the laws have changed. What is full-time used to be something over 35 hours, technically, I guess, by the business community anyway, was really considered full-time. But nowadays, with regards to whether or not you have to provide healthcare insurance for your workers, it's based on 30 hours a week as the full-time mark. What is the impact on my business? You know, is that in terms of I have the option, just like the individuals in the community that goes to the marketplace, the business, I guess, has choices and same sort of thing that they
can
approach.
And that's part of the analysis I was saying that companies, especially small employers, really need to be doing now. You know, it's not one size fits all. Every company's got to figure out what works for it, because you have to be able to recruit and retain your employees, and that may be crucial. But, you know, in the end, it's the bottom line. You've got to stay in business. So the analysis that has to be done is for an employer who's at or close to the threshold for being subject to this law needs to sit back and say, well, okay, I have a decision. Do I offer medical coverage to all of my full-time employees? You know, make sure that the portion they pay is affordable and pay the remainder of it myself. You have to total up those numbers, you know, with your broker and figure out what is this overall cost. Now, the advantage is you offer medical coverage. It's tax deductible. You do get that goodwill from employees. You know, we can figure in all of these things. But now the flip side, or the other side of what you're weighing, is going to be, okay, what if I just don't offer medical coverage? You know, I'm looking at it. It's going to be expensive. Yes. I don't know if I'll be able to get enough people to enroll. So you say, well, what if I just don't offer it at all? Well, by not offering it, that's a choice. You can do that, but you're subject to a penalty as a result. And so you have to back into that. Let's say I'm an employer with, you know, 50 full-time employees. Mm-hmm. So I'm subject to the Affordable Care Act, but I'm small by relatively speaking. If I chose not to offer health coverage to my employees, you know, I would be looking at, you know, not to get into the detailed numbers, but roughly $40,000 in penalties per year that are not tax deductible. And I've lost that goodwill potentially, or the recruiting potential with employees. So for some businesses, that's going to make sense. But for a lot of other businesses, you know, it's just not doable. Or they have a philosophy that they want to make sure they're taking care of employees. You know, there's a lot of different factors that go into it, but it's just important that people focus on it now rather than doing it sort of after the fact.
I'm sure you get a comment, oh, I've got a payroll company, I've got a benefits broker, whatever the case may be. They're taking care of that for me. I'm all good.
Right. And that is a dangerous assumption. Yeah. We've been dealing with it for years, and there are a lot of fantastic brokers, a lot of payroll companies who are on the ball and they've got this all mapped out. You know, that is great if that's what's in place. But you need to make sure that everything's been lined up. We have an employer reporting requirement for the first time coming up at the end of March. For the very first time, employers have to actually provide, similar to kind of a W-2, a statement to employees saying, here's the health coverage I offered or didn't offer and why. So part of this employer reporting requirement, you know, is that in order to comply with it, you have to pull all this information together from payroll vendors, from benefits providers. Who's doing this for you?
Yeah.
You know, if this is coming as news to you and you're listening to this, you may want to circle back around with all the people who you think are covering you and just make sure, because you don't want to come to, you know, March 29th.
And that's a mandatory requirement, right?
It's a mandatory requirement. It's a minimum of $250 per statement penalty per employee. And it starts adding up quickly, and it can easily double and triple, you know, by the time we get down to all the different statements and returns that you have to file. So unless you want to ruin your Easter weekend leading up to the 31st, you know, it's important to make sure you've got it, somebody handling it for you.
With regards to that required reporting, how are you seeing businesses successfully do that? When, if they have some of the resources we talked about, they have a benefits broker out there, they've got a payroll company that is cutting their paychecks for them. Has there been a strategy with which they are able to pull that information together, or is there some kind of service people are using that's aggregating that to make it a little bit more simple? How are they tackling that requirement?
Yeah, there's been a few fly-by-night, for lack of a better term, folks out there online who have tried to sell some products that have already started to fail. So a few people could find themselves in a bind. Most of the big reputable payroll vendors and benefits brokers have some sort of combined product that they've allowed employers to buy sort of as an add-on. But I think what we're really going to see in the coming years, and especially probably going into this summer and fall and into next year, is a lot more employers investigating, you know, should I be bundling all these sorts of things together? Because to provide these statements that people have to provide at the end of this month, they have to, for the first time, pull a lot of information from a lot of different sources, payroll, benefits, online enrollment, all sorts of things that didn't used to have to talk to each other. And so I think you're going to see a big trend and a big, you know, if you want to invest, maybe that's the potential, right?
You talked about the penalty that exists if you should be offering benefits, but you don't. Are there other considerations for those small businesses? Maybe they're exempt from ACA requirements based on their size. Is there any other considerations that they really need to be thinking about around it?
Yeah, that's a good point. For a lot of small employers, so you have less than 50 full-time equivalents, you know, you think, I'm off the hook. First and foremost, do you have any related companies? You know, if you're not in the know and you're an office manager, talk to your owners,
okay,
especially if they have a lot of closely held family investments. But also, the Affordable Care Act isn't just this employer mandate. It's also a lot of just internal content requirements on any type of medical coverage that any size employer offers. And one of the big places where we see and where there's some huge exposure is for a lot of very small, especially professional types of organizations, you know, accountants, law firms, doctor's offices, maybe found over prior years, hey, I really can't afford to, or I don't want to deal with providing medical coverage to my employees. So what they did was said, you know, Bob, Sally, Bill, hand me your receipt. And every month I'll pay you whatever it costs, mm-hmm, and I'll reimburse you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, starting with some guidance about a year and a half ago, those actually now violate the Affordable Care Act. And it is a huge potential penalty if you keep one of those in place. Mm. It is $100 per day per employee you have. So if you picture, if you have 10 employees, you're just a small mom and pop type office, and you have one of these arrangements in place, you could potentially be looking at $1,000 a day, or even, you know, well, $1,000 a day penalty that accrues. And most times you're not going to get audited and find out about this until, you know, a couple years later. So now we've added up a lot of penalties. It's often overlooked. And as we go into tax season, it's a great thing for people to talk with their CPA about and make sure that they're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Are there other things on the horizon around either ACA or other legal or tax issues that you see now that we're in that kind of season that they need to be thinking about, they being the business owners, business executives that are going to be listening?
We were starting to focus more on, within the ACA, on the Cadillac tax that we've all heard so much about, this 40% excise tax. That was slated to go into effect in 2018. That has now been pushed back to 2020, you know, so it's a little off our radar. I don't think that people need to be focusing on that today. We're seeing a lot more IRS and Department of Labor focus of audits on employers and how they're operating all their different benefit programs. It's something good to just sort of make sure your T's are crossed and I's are dotted. You know, make sure that as you meet with your CPA to get your taxes completed, or as you move into the summer with your benefits broker, just making sure. HIPAA, people are very focused on privacy of their electronic and personal data. You know, are your health plans protecting it? Are your benefits complying with the ACA? Have you really focused on your retirement plans and made sure that, you know, if you discovered maybe you are part of one of these related groups of companies as part of your ACA compliance? Well, by the way, that impacts your 401k plan or some of your other benefits. Just make sure that at some point you're sitting back and looking at the whole. It's just a good time to do a checkup.
So with your particular practice, Anne, obviously you have expertise around the Affordable Care Act and how it affects your business clients. What are the other aspects of the practice for you as you, you know, interact with your clients?
Well, we're a full service employee benefits group. We handle everything from executive compensation for companies. We may help them, you know, attract and negotiate contracts with an executive that's coming in. We may assist on the individual side where an executive says, listen, I'm leaving a company. I need to talk about my non-compete and what's in place and what I could negotiate. Or, hey, I'm going into a new company. What can I do here? We also help a lot of growing businesses with, you know, what types of incentives can we offer? Stock options, restricted stock, all these different equity incentives. And what's best for me? You know, what'll really achieve my goals without, you know, down the road looking back and thinking, oh, darn, why did I do that?
Are there particular demographics around the clients that you typically serve, whether it's business size or maybe industry verticals that you tend to place some focus on?
Our big focus is on the middle market, small to mid-size companies. You know, we don't typically represent the huge, you know, mega companies that we have here in town or nationally. Doesn't matter location. We certainly work with companies no matter where their offices might be located. But that's really our big niche is the small to mid-sized companies, especially those that are growing and sort of just need a helping hand, someone that they can reach out to and reach and speak with on the phone, you know, at a moment's notice to talk about an issue. They may not have an inside legal counsel or a lot of inside assistance on the HR side. And we serve as sort of that sounding board for them.
So as it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the Affordable Care Act and my business, if I say, I've got an accountant that's handling my, you know, my tax preparation and all that for me, does an individual like that have the knowledge that they need to be able to make sure that I'm compliant with the ACA, or would it be more advantageous to have somebody who's on the legal side be able to interpret the law for you?
I'm a little biased being a lawyer, but certainly I think that it's good and it's well worth the cost to at least have a phone call or a sit down meeting, even for an hour to make sure that you really are in compliance. The stakes have gone up and the price tag is so high.
Right.
If you get this wrong, you know, a lot of times, I mean, It never bothers us to get on the phone with someone for 5 or 10 minutes and just talk about their basic facts. We can usually identify whether or not there's any potential issue that we need to talk further about. But it's a good gut check for a lot of people. And we're always happy to do that.
You want to tell folks where they can get in touch with you so they can get their questions answered?
So my direct line is 404-322-6603. I can be reached by email at ann.murray@nelsonmullins.com. And we're always available. We try to get back to you same day.
Well, I look forward to having more conversations with you and your colleagues, because obviously legal concerns and compliance with regulations play a big role in your success or possible failure as a business, or at least whether or not you end up avoiding, you know, some of the legal and financial penalties that can come with whether you realize you're out of compliance or not. So it's a great idea, particularly for those growing companies starting to amass some employees, to get with legal expert like Ann and her team at Nelson Mullins to make sure that you're going down the right road, particularly early in your organizational development. You want to start down the right path so you're not having to go back and dig your way out of a big hole. So thanks for taking some time, and hopefully we'll have you back and we'll talk some more.
Thanks for having me.
And as I mentioned earlier, we also are joined here in the studio with Adam Smith and Department of Procurement for City of Atlanta. So thanks for taking some time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm all about helping small businesses in the community find opportunities. And I've over time, both through working with Small Business Administration and colleagues of yours from the city, I know that there are a number of opportunities, whether that's collaborating with MARTA or a whole host of departments throughout the city of Atlanta that are available for the small business community. So talk a little bit about what you're trying to achieve through your department.
If I may just tell you briefly what I do and how the Department of Procurement operates. I serve as the Chief Procurement Officer for the City of Atlanta Department of Procurement. And the Department of Procurement primarily is responsible for purchasing all of the goods and services for all of the city departments, including the airport, and including our major watershed department, as well as our police, fire, all of our public safety departments. So it's a huge operation. It's a big responsibility, making sure that all departments have their goods and services and their needs met in order to service the city. So it's no small task. And in fact, it's a big task. And and we enjoy doing it, making sure that our constituents are happy and satisfied. And I could not do this without the tremendous leadership of our mayor, Kasim Reed. So we make sure that our departments have what they need in order to serve the city.
And when you're talking about the things they need, I mean, we're talking about everything from hand soap, paper clips, to capital equipment.
Absolutely. We classify it into several buckets. Commodities, which would be the pens, pencils, paper, the soap, the chemicals for the swimming pools, the chemicals for the water, the uniforms for the public safety agencies. The weapons, the bullets, any and everything that needs to be purchased for a department to operate efficiently and effectively, or we are responsible or somewhat involved in helping to purchase that.
So how many departments does that include?
15.
15.
Yeah.
And how many people are under those 15 departments?
Well, it varies.
It's thousands.
Thousands, yeah. Roughly close to 8,000 citywide employees. But each department has its own number of employees, and it varies depending on the department.
As we were talking about, the fact that the city's departments need these different materials, like I say, from you talked about basic commodities to paper and soap and pencils, but it also in other types of equipment, whatever those might be, that the city might need. So that opens a door for opportunity, because the city will interface with local merchants that have products and services that meet those needs. And so talk about that kind of opportunity.
Absolutely. That's where my department comes in, because we're responsible for soliciting for the goods and services, bringing on the businesses who can provide those goods and services for the city department. And that's done through a competitive process, through what we call our solicitation process. As government procurement, we're responsible to promote competition, making sure that we give all businesses an opportunity to compete for the business. One of the things that we enjoy doing is making sure that local businesses are also a part of our process. And so we try to include them in everything that we, particularly our local businesses. One of the things that we're doing soon this month, March 31st, Thursday, March 31st, we're having our vendor expo. We'll call it our business expo. And it's really one of our premier events, and it's an opportunity for the vendor community, our business community, to interact with city officials from various departments. It's really what we call our business learning day, where the business community can learn how to do business with the city of Atlanta. There you will learn how to put a proposal together, just basic information. We can't help you put a proposal together, but just provide you with basic information on what's required for our proposals. What are some of the required forms we require need to complete. What are some of the pitfalls that we've seen some of the other proponents do in past solicitations? But the most important thing, it gives the vendor community an opportunity to learn and understand what the prospective procurements are going to be so that you can prepare your businesses for those opportunities. And I will tell you that at the city, we're extremely busy. If you can just look at the airport, if you've been at the airport, you know how busy we are. And it's continuing to grow. Lots of construction, lots of professional services. So there are many opportunities for the business community to get involved in doing business with the city of Atlanta.
Now, you mentioned that one of the things that the business owner will learn at this upcoming business expo on the 31st is common mistakes. Do you have a couple of things that underlying things you see?
I think one of the most common mistakes some of our vendors, many do, we have some required forms that you have to complete that accompany your proposal. We have a checklist in all of our solicitations, and we want you to abide by that checklist. We created that checklist for you so that when you're ready to seal up your proposal, close your proposal before you submit it to us, you go through that checklist to make sure that you've completed everything on that checklist. And almost all of those things on the checklist are required documents. They're not voluntary documents. They're required, mandated documents that we require you to submit. So if I had to pick any one particular pitfall or common mistake, it's in that area of not submitting the required forms that we typically require the proponents to submit.
I mean, I would imagine if that happens, when you open the bid proposal and you notice that form XYZ is not included, that just basically moves them off to the side for consideration on this particular issue, and they have to try again on something else.
That's typically the recourse, unfortunately. That's why it's very important, because it is a competition, that's why it's very important that we encourage you to abide by the requirements of the solicitation.
With regards to doing business with the city on these types of procurement issues, are there particular either structural considerations, the way my business is put together, whether it's incorporation style or whatever, those types of considerations, are any of those come into play?
Not particularly. We have what you call the Office of Contract Compliance, which is a separate and distinct office from my office. But that office focuses on making sure that minority and female-owned businesses are given an opportunity. They have certain structural requirements for businesses. And so I would encourage the business community to contact. If you're interested in doing business with the city as a minority or female-owned business, you have to be certified in order to do that, first of all. And you have to receive certification from that office. And I would encourage contacting that office directly to determine what those certification requirements are. Now, we will have representatives at the Business Expo, and there will be sessions on how to become a certified minority and female-owned business. Generally, I mean, there are no legal or business requirements in terms of how your business is structured. You do have to register to do business with the city, and that's a simple process. Before you can ever apply or submit a bid or proposal, you have to become a city registered vendor, and that's simply done by going to the city's website and registering your business, which can be done online, and you're giving a registration number.
Now, for a period of time, we had the folks from the Georgia Minority Suppliers Development Council, one of the bodies that will certify minority business enterprises, for example. If they go through that process with GMSDC, does that also take care of the piece that you were talking about with the
No, not client? Necessarily. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of reciprocity. So a lot of the registrations have to be done independently and separately. And the city's minority and female business certification process is done separately.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Because I'm sure that's probably confusing for some folks. I got certified with GMSDC as an MBE, but what's the deal?
A lot of businesses believe that, well, I've got certified at Fulton County, I got certified DeKalb County, therefore I'm okay with the city, and that's not necessarily the case. So I encourage you to check with the particular agency to make sure that you've met the certifications.
It's when a company wants to try to become a supplier for the city of Atlanta, are there certain things they need to do to kind of get ready to make that bid?
Absolutely. Again, the first thing you must do is register to do business with the city. That's the very first thing we look for. And again, that's a very simple process, which can be done online. go to the city's website. I'll give that out later. And you can simply register your business online. It's a simple process, answering a few questions, and then you're provided a vendor number and you go from there. We look for that number when you submit your proposal or bid on our solicitations to ensure that you are a registered vendor with the city.
So are there, when I go to do business with the city, I mean, what's the project typically like? Is it a time limited or is it one that will be a relationship that's ongoing? I guess there's probably both.
Yeah, it's both. And primarily, most of our solicitations are, we have bids. A bid is different than an RFP, an RFP request for a proposal. Those are two different procurement methods, the way that we procure goods and services for the city. In both instances, the relationship can be long-term. And I will say in most instances, the relationship, if you're doing business with us, is long-term because the contracts are long-term. For instance, for our professional services contracts, if you're doing engineering services or some type of construction service, then that's, of course, going to take a long time. And typically, you know, over 2, maybe 3 years, depending on the sophistication or extent of the project. Concessionaire projects or contracts. I mean, those are long-term contracts. A lot of people don't realize that when you run an airport, you're running the concessions at the airport as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
So you go through all of the terminals. The City of Atlanta's aviation department is responsible for making sure that all of those terminals are filled with concessionaires, food and beverage, and retail. And so those are long-term contracts. And so those are our concessionaire contracts.
When you compare the bid versus RFP, what would you say the biggest distinguishing factor between those?
Typically, the biggest distinguishing factor is that with your bid, with an ITB invitation to bid, we look solely at price.
Okay.
There are other factors that we would likely take into consideration, probably making sure that you're insured, that you have the bonding capacity, that you meet the general requirements, that you're qualified, and so on and so forth. But price is primarily the sole factor. With an RFP, price alone is not the sole factor. There are other things that are taken into consideration. Your experience, your team makeup, whether or not you've done projects of this magnitude or size or like in the past. So there are other factors that you consider. So those are some of the differences between the two ways that we procure the goods and services.
We've been talking with Chief Procurement Officer for the City of Atlanta, Adam Smith, learning about the opportunities for the small and mid-sized businesses around the city to do business with the various departments. As Adam was explaining earlier, 15 different departments, including the airport. Obviously, a huge opportunity for the small and mid-sized business community here in Atlanta to expand their base of business and get into a relationship that could lead to a long-term engagement for their business and another base of revenue to base their business growth upon. And Adam, you were talking about the expo that's coming up on the 31st. Where is that going to be held?
At the Georgia World Congress Center, which is downtown. And the address is 285 Andrew Young International Boulevard.
It's going to go all day long.
It's all from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Again, like I said, it's one of our biggest events. It's a great opportunity for the business community to come and interact with various members of various departments. And again, to learn about opportunities, perspective procurements and opportunities that are forthcoming.
Do you need to register in advance of that?
You need to register. We will take registration on the spot as well, okay. But we encourage you to register early. You can register at, and here's the site, it's ditweb.atlanta.gov/DOPVE/. If I can read that again.
Sure.
It's ditweb.atlantaga.gov/DOPVE/. And if you have any problems, feel free to call the office at 404-330-6444.
And I'll make sure I put a link to the registration on the blog post when we put the podcast up. So folks can, if they were listening to the podcast version, they just want to pop over into the text of the blog around this episode, they can just go straight over and register from there. In addition to the expo event that you're talking about, it sounds like it's going to be a really nice learning opportunity from helping to learn how to better prepare oneself for this kind of opportunity, as well as learning what types of current procurement needs there are.
Yeah, well, I would like to say, just give you a sample of some of the classes that we will have there.
Yeah.
We call one of our main classes Procurement 101. That will teach you how to register to do business with the city. After you're registered, what do I do next? And we'll be able to answer questions like that. How to obtain your Office of Contract Compliance, OCC certification, Minority and Female Business certification. How to submit invoices, which is always an issue for some of our vendors. How do I, once I do the work, how do I submit my invoice and get paid? We're going to talk about some of those things. And then how to navigate the city's website, which can be a challenge for some people. Procurement services, what are some of the service contracts that we will be letting over the next few months? And what is the difference between an ITB and an RFP and so on and so forth? Just basic procurement information. And then how to complete required submittals. I talked earlier about some of the required documents that we require with our solicitations. We're going to spend some time at the expo sort of going through that with those in attendance to kind of walk through what we look for, what we require, and what you must do in order to have a complete solicitation on and submitting those requirements. We're going to talk about commodities. What are some of the commodities contracts? How to submit a successful bid submission? So on and so forth. So ethics and bonding requirements, insurance requirements. So it's a full day of learning from the very small vendor to the largest vendor, small business to the biggest business. I don't think you'll leave without having learned a lot.
And it sounds like a great opportunity. So if you are available on the 31st, make sure you register to go to the Georgia World Congress Center, the business expo that they're hosting from the Department of Procurement here from the city of Atlanta. And Adam, are there website resources where someone can go also if they're not able to say to get to one of your expos that you're putting on? Is there a place that they can go online to see what opportunities are out there for them?
Sure. You can always go to the city's website, which is www.atlanta.ga.gov. Again, it's www.atlanta.ga.gov. You can sort of navigate yourself through the various departments, but if you're more than welcome to go to the Department of Procurement, and it will highlight all of the things that are going on in terms of our solicitations and the various department projects that are out for bid.
So I can actually find out about some opportunities for my company and even if I'm not able to make it to the
And
to
in
the
fact,
expo.
One of the things that we do that we're required to do, we're required to advertise many of our, almost all of our projects solicitations, and we advertise on our website. So it is a good place to go to and to frequent to see what projects are out for bid for our solicitations.
Do you have any final thoughts before I let you get back to your office? I know you've been taking some time away and you're pretty busy.
Well, I just want to reemphasize the website. It's atlantaga.gov.
Right.
I said www, but it's atlantaga.gov to make it very simple. And so you're welcome to go there and go to procurement's website and look at the projects that are out for bid. It's also educational to learn about how to do business with the city. Our website will sort of give you some pointers on that as well.
Well, I want to say thank you very much to Adam Smith and Ann Murray joining me in the studio today. We're all about fulfilling our mission to help businesses grow in our area around the city of Atlanta. It sounds like based on talking to these folks today, there's some really nice opportunities out there, both to help your small and mid-sized business grow by doing business with the city. And then, of course, with Ann and her team, making sure that your business is staying in compliance with the changing regulations. Some of them now have some pretty significant impacts on your business. So you want to make sure that you're sitting down with the right expert to get your questions answered, make sure you're on the right path before you stumble off into the darkness and find yourself getting calls from people you really don't want to hear from. So Adam and Ann, I really want to say thank you very much for making time to sit down with us today.
Thank you. Thanks.
Any final thoughts? Did we cover everything we needed to get out there?
Well, I just wanted to highlight again about the Vendor Expo. I mean, I talked a bit about all of the sessions that we will have there, but it's also a networking opportunity for other businesses to get to know other businesses and to network. So we encourage that as well.
So make sure you get to the link in the blog post about the upcoming expo. Get registered, get down there, get yourself note up on all the things doing business with the city of Atlanta. And I'm really happy to share that information with you. For the folks who are coming back for the podcast, if you've not done so already, go to the upper left-hand corner of the show page. You'll see the Apple logo there. That'll take you over to the iTunes store, the Midtown Business Radio Show podcast. You can subscribe to it. And that way, each week, the new episode will be downloaded straight to your device for your drive to work or walking the dog. And if you would turn around and share this with your social media contacts, you never know when you're going to put this information in the hand of somebody that really makes a big difference for them and their business. So we hope you do that. And I'll say thanks in advance. And we look forward to seeing you all same time, same place next week. We'll see you then.